Is the Lord's Day sanctified by man's work or man's rest? I've written an article for the latest issues, etc. journal titled Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details former Baptist minister Dennis McFadden's journey to the objectivity of the Lutheran Confession of Faith. The free Issues, etc. journal. Well, an ancient Greek philosopher once opined that you'd never step in the same river twice. It's always changing. Everything is always changing. That's how I feel sometimes when we talk about Hinduism. I'll talk to one guest about it, and I get kind of one picture of Hinduism. I talk to another one, and it's not that it's contradictory. I don't even know if contradictory even is an applicable word when it comes to Hinduism. It's just different. It seems to be as different as those who call themselves Hindus. So what do Hindus believe, teach, practice? What do they think of God, of man, of man's predicament, and of the way out of that predicament? Joining us to talk about the teachings and practices of Hinduism on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 8th, Dr. Adam Francisco. He's Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Irvine, California. He's author of the Bible study titled One Word, Many Writings, A Study of the Origins of Religious Writings. And he's also written a recent article for the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Being a Hindu. Dr. Francisco, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Most people have kind of a cartoon, stereotypical picture of Hinduism in their mind. It has something to do with traveling to an exotic locale, maybe Kathmandu or something, seeking out a guru who's usually kind of a white-haired, bearded character in a robe, sitting cross-legged on a hilltop, and then just either learning something from him or sitting there and seeking enlightenment with the guru. How close is that to real Hinduism?
Hinduism is so diverse, it's hard to answer that question. That's a very much a popularized, maybe a westernized version of Hinduism. But if we want to talk about classical historic Hinduism, it's pretty far or pretty distant from it. Classical Hinduism is, very, at least in terms of the external appearance, is very polytheistic. There's a multitude, hundreds, thousands of deities under the heading of Hinduism. And the way the various devotees, people who are devoted to worship of some of these deities, one or the other, or a whole slew of them at the same time, differs from region to region.
It is an ancient religion, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, especially a Hindu would say that it's the eternal religion. That is, it's the religion of the universe. It certainly is old in terms of the historical record of Hinduism. The sacred texts from the Vedas to the Upanishads to the Bhagavad Gita, all are quite old. Whether it's as old as, say, the faith of Abraham, that can't be answered really historically because we just don't have any evidence. But the claim is that it's ancient and eternal.
So how would you describe its doctrine, beginning with, let's start with God, we'll go to man's dilemma and the solution? You mentioned radically polytheistic. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, that's what it looks like from the outside, for especially somebody who doesn't understand Hinduism, and it's not the easiest thing to understand. You could study it for 20 years and not really get to it, and I think that in many ways is kind of the point, because there is a sense of skepticism or agnosticism in Hinduism that says if you think you've understood it, you actually haven't. So, but if you're a Westerner, especially trying to figure things out, the inner rationale of things, when you observe Hindus in the classic heartlands of Hinduism in India, for example, it looks like they worship a whole multitude of things, from graven images to animals and maybe anything in between. Now, the underlying worldview of Hinduism, the underlying theology or philosophy of it, is actually, despite appearances, monistic and pantheistic. Monistic in that it sees everything as connected. One of the sayings, or the, if you will, doctrines of Hinduism is that Brahman is all, and all is Brahman. And Brahman is sort of a name for God, but at the same time, not really. The whole point is that everything is connected, and everything shares in this deity. When you see, especially here in California, where we've got yoga places on every street corner, you often see people bowing to each other outside the yoga studio, or they'll have little bumper stickers that say Namaste on them. That's actually a Hindu saying that says, I bow or I salute to the deity within you. So in Hinduism, there's this real sense that in every person, in every organic thing, it shares in some way in some sort of divinity. So it's monistic and pantheistic as well, in that everything is divinized in some sense.
So in that framework, that kind of cosmology, who is man?
Hindus, of course, differ on this, but in short, man is just one among many things, living things, that one deity amongst a whole slew of other deities. Sometimes I've heard Hindus refer to humans, and especially, as being sleeping deities, that is, people who are God but haven't realized it yet or haven't woken up to the fact. There is no sense, of course, in Hinduism of human beings being by nature sinful and unclean. Those aren't really categories that Hindus deal with. Man is just one thing that's actually connected to everything else, and in fact, the goal in Hinduism is to realize that you're not an independent, separate thing, but actually part of the one. And in fact, you are the one. So you make of that what you will.
What is man's dilemma? What's the situation in which man finds himself in need of Hinduism?
Yeah, well, here's actually where Hinduism does have some pretty discreet answers, at least when you look at the philosophical side of Hinduism. The way they usually put it is that, and Buddhism does to some extent as well, as it's an offshoot of Hinduism, it says that everything, humans especially, are stuck in this cycle of samsara. You think of the cycle of reincarnation. You're stuck in this never-ending cycle where your soul, which is the only thing that's not temporal to you, constantly transmigrates or reincarnates through this cycle, from century to century, from eon to eon, and so on into infinity. So you're stuck in the cycle. The reason why you're stuck is that you actually think that this present world is really real, when Hinduism says it's not. Hinduism says everything, the things we perceive with our senses, the things we think are true and real, are actually illusory, or the term they will use is maya. They don't really exist. We've actually kind of created them, those things, in our own mind. So the more you distinguish things and distinguish one creature from another, or apply categories on things that you perceive with your senses, the more you stay stuck in this cycle. So the goal, though, in Hinduism is to get out, and they'll call that moksha or release. The way to get out of that cycle, to enter nirvana, or to be absorbed back into the world soul or the cosmic oneness of things, is to realize that you don't really exist as an independent individual person, that nothing really exists independently. Everything is simply one. Now, that sort of I haven't studied Hinduism all that long, maybe 10, 15 years tops, and the more I study it, the more confused I get. But in my mind, in terms of trying to understand the basic rationale of it, that's the basic picture of it.
We're talking about Hinduism, its beliefs and practices, on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 8th. Dr. Adam Francisco is our guest, Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Irvine, California, and author of a Bible study titled One Word, Many Writings, A Study of the Origins of Religious Writings, and an article in the Lutheran Witness titled Being a Hindu. We'll be right back. My soul, I declare my star.
school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
At Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, we are mostly looked down upon by cool people. They're always telling us that we take ourselves too seriously. That, apparently, is the uncoolest thing on the planet. We are theological nerds. We get more incensed by bad exegesis than a group of comic book fans who find out the hero was just dreaming. Some people want us to calm down, but we aren't going to. Redeemer, Fort Wayne, haven for theological nerds.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sikeston, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama. And Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues, Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the teachings and practices of Hinduism with Dr. Adam Francisco. Dr. Francisco, you mentioned before that the goal of Hinduism is to get the individual Hindu out of this cycle, and this is done by essentially realizing that everything here is kind of illusory, that your individuality is illusory. How does that connect to the many deities of Hinduism? Do these Hindu deities, do they, in that system of belief, offer any kind of assistance to the Hindu? Are they just an example to aspire toward? I'm just wondering, is the individual Hindu on his own in this cycle and on his own to get off this cycle?
Both and, in a sense. You can do it, go at it your own, but oftentimes real classic-minded traditional Hindus will typically become what's often referred to as a devotee, you know, somebody who's devoted to the worship of a particular Hindu deity. So probably one of the more popular forms of classic Hinduism in the United States would be Krishna consciousness, or the International Society of Krishna Consciousness here, the Hare Krishnas, the guys in the airports with the little ponytails and bells and things. And they are particular, they're devotees of what they refer to as Lord Krishna, who is an avatar, an incarnation, if you will, or was an incarnation of Vishnu, which in the Hindu pantheon of God is one of the big deities, often seen as the preserver of all things. And some Krishnas, or Hare Krishnas, will treat Krishna or Vishnu as the deity that that provides for them, that equips them for life, that sustains them in life and preserves them on their path towards moksha. And along with that, you have not necessarily priests in Hinduism, but there is a, you know, at least traditional Hinduism, there was a priestly class, the Brahmin class, that were, in a sense, enlightened people on their path towards moksha who could act as guides or teachers. In the Hare Krishna movement, it was Prabhupada who brought Krishna consciousness here, but it was discovered, in a sense, that he wasn't just an enlightened teacher, but in fact was yet another avatar of Vishnu. So, I mean, as you can tell, it's extremely diverse and really hard to pin down. And quite frankly, if you want to know what a Hindu thinks, you actually do have to ask every individual person who identifies with Hinduism. So like Julia Roberts, who came out, I don't know, it was, I think within a year, who announced that she's basically a practicing Hindu. What does that mean? Who on earth knows? You'd really have to to sit down and ask her some pointed questions. Because it can be, Hinduism can be expressed literally thousands, maybe millions of ways.
That kind of highlights something in our several conversations with various guests on the issue of Hinduism. We kind of run up against it. It's another major kind, subtle but major difference between Christianity and Hinduism. And that is Christianity is internally consistent and does depend in some sense upon reason and logic. Hinduism doesn't appear to be encumbered by any of that.
Right. Those are, in fact, the real rigorous, more polemical Hindus would say that logic is simply a Western construct that was developed in Western civilization. Some will go so far as to say it was developed to alienate or marginalize other civilizations that don't abide by the laws or the rules or the ethos of Western civilization. What you find, though, especially if you, probably one of the greatest apologists in dealing with Hinduism would be like a man like Ravi Zacharias, is when push comes to shove, a Hindu actually does have to, when it comes to life in the real world, they have to abide by the laws of logic, that they cannot live consistently with their worldview, because a Hindu will look both ways when they cross the street.
Another aspect of it, which kind of that's the individual, kind of the corporate aspect of it, that Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, frequent guest on this program, I know you're familiar with him as well, points out about Hinduism is has disastrous results in society, because every man's kind of on his own, and you don't want to upset the delicate balance of one man's progress toward enlightenment. It tends to produce societies when it is in political majority that, well, look at India. It's not a racist concept to say that there's severe class issues there, poverty issues that are only fueled, as Dr. Montgomery says, by the worldview of Hinduism. What are your thoughts there?
Sure, with the old caste system, which is allegedly has been abolished or outlawed in India, is actually still sort of de facto in place. And if you look at the basic ethics of Hinduism, even there's a passage in the Bhagavad Gita that basically says that since everything is one, every person kind of makes up their own morality. There's no good and bad. There just simply is what is, and everything that is one. And so whatever you do is what you do. So it can produce a radical moral relativism. That is not to say that Hindus necessarily are bad moral people, but there's nothing that would keep a Hindu would restrain them, because things just are as they are, and even more so, they actually aren't. So it's very paradoxical or contradictory.
Finally, then, what is the appeal of Hinduism, and what does Christianity offer that is the real answer to what people seek when they seek out the guru, the enlightened master, the deities, or a Hindu way of life?
Sure. Well, the appeal, 2009, and I think it was Newsweek, an article came out called We're All Hindus Now, and argued from some Pew Research that 75% of Americans call themselves or label themselves as Christian, but 50% of those Christians, when you look at their basic beliefs, are much more akin to Hindu beliefs. And I honestly think Hinduism isn't all that appealing, at least classical Hinduism, but I think Hindu ideas or, you know, Eastern ideas more generally kind of find their way in to Western culture through sort of esoteric things like yoga, for example, in music, maybe our sort of relativist culture. It doesn't make sense to a classic Western worldview, but to a, you know, relativism does certainly make sense in a Hindu, from a Hindu mindset. So maybe that's kind of appealing. It kind of confirms Hinduism in a sense. It confirms the trends in, you know, contemporary American or Western culture. In terms of what Christianity has to offer to Hinduism or somebody stuck in a Hindu mindset, is it offers a number of things. Most importantly, it, in a sense, I hesitate to use the terminology, does offer moksha or release from the cycle. I don't think a cycle of samsara actually happens, but Christianity gives real definite answers to man's basic problem. That is, he's in a big quandary in that he's failed miserably to measure up to the standards of God, and not just because of his activity, but just because of who he is. And so Christianity and the gospel offers objective salvation. It's not something that is accomplished for a person, not something that the person himself has to accomplish.
Dr. Adam Francisco is Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Irvine, California. He has authored a Bible study titled One World, Many Writings, A Study of the Origins of Religious Writings, and he's also written a recent article for the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Being a Hindu. By the way, you can find a link to One World, Many Writings, A Study of the Origins of Religious Writings by Dr. Adam Francisco at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for it, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Francisco, thanks for being our guest.
You're welcome.
When we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, we're going to spend the last 10 minutes or so talking about St. Louis Cardinals baseball postseason. Rick Horton will join us, a color commentator for the Cardinals and a former pitcher for the Cardinals, the Dodgers, and the White Sox. We'll be talking Cardinals baseball for the last 10 minutes of Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Erst Heating and Cooling is a third-generation, family-owned company and has been serving the Metro East for decades. Erst is a Lennox and GeoComfort geothermal dealer and services all makes and models of heating and cooling systems. Now is the time for your heating system checkup. Whether it's service or maintenance for your existing heating or cooling system or a whole new system, you need to call Erst Heating and Cooling. Call them at 618-633-2244 or ErstHeating.com. Erst Heating and Cooling, Hamel, Illinois.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.